This is a production of Cornell University.
So, meeting of the Employee Assembly, Wednesday, December 21st, GO8 Years Hall. Are there any late additions to the agenda? Beth?
If there's time, I would like to talk about the upcoming EA election,
mm-hmm.
because we just talked about the employee election, mm-hmm. and we talked about synchronizing them.
Okay, great. Any other additions to the agenda? All right, well, while we're waiting for Mary and David to get here, if we can take a look at the minutes, if anybody has any corrections. If there are no corrections, I'll make, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. All right, while we're waiting for Mary and David to come in, can we talk very quickly about the retreat that we have scheduled for the 4th of January? Does that still work for everyone who has said that they could attend? That would be January 4th from 9 to 1.
Can we get an idea of how many people? Can be there?
Okay.
Who are you saying yes or no?
Who can be there?
I'm sorry. You say those dates again?
January 4th from 9 to 1. Can be there. I know Linda can't. Gemma can't. Curtis, you cannot be there.
Lavanya could not either.
And Lavanya could not. So, Gemma, Curtis.
Was Gary a no also?
I think he was. Yeah. So I've got Gemma, Curtis, Gary, Lavanya, and Linda who could not attend. Did I get everyone? Jason did not respond to this, so I don't know, and he's not here today. So I could put Jason as a possible no.
I was thinking he said no.
Yeah. Well, if we count Jason in there, that is 6 people of the 13 who can't be there. So,
my other question is, do we have enough material to have the retreat?
We were going to go over our budget. We were going to talk about notice and respond. We were going to talk about the survey. Right.
Claudia.
And maybe look at the logo.
And the logo.
And try to maybe set a calendar of things for the next year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
So the question is, do we move forward with 7 people being there? And just have the work happen? Yes, no, indifferent?
Yes.
You're not going to be there.
I don't know a lot of the people in the room.
Mm-hmm. I agree with her.
Okay.
What would be the alternative? To do it later in January?
Either to do it later in January, which, again, we're going to have, I think, you know, look, the other date as an option was Wednesday 11th, and we already have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people who could not do that day. So it's just going to switch it. And I guess we'll table.
Sorry.
That's all right.
It's not our fault. Thank you for your notes, by the way.
You're welcome. Welcome. Thanks.
I meant to email you and tell you that, but.
We'll grab some lunch. So, move forward with the retreat on the 4th?
Yes?
Okay. Then we will do that. And we'll look at the schedule, and we may be able to cut it shorter since we'll be a smaller group and a little earlier. Thank you.
Yeah.
We are having it there. Yes.
Physical science building.
Physical science building.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one where
the
leaves.
Mm-hmm. But Bill, I don't understand what building that is.
It's that new glass building.
Yeah.
On Isa.
Oh yeah. It's like right up. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what way we are now.
Next to Russell.
Oh, yeah. Across from
Lincoln. Yeah. Everybody bring your left no.
leftover cookie.
Okay.
Can I sit next to you?
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you. Very civilized. We have a 90-pound puppy. 90 pounds.
Puppy.
Yeah.
Puppy.
Puts his head in my plate every day.
What kind of dog is it?
Oh, yeah,
all right, thank you.
Too large a dog.
Those are awesome dogs.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Yeah. You've been busy the past couple days, huh?
The past 4 days, yeah.
Just a tiny bit.
Did you all fly down or did you drive down?
I'll tell you, without crying on your shoulder too much, my kid was sick in Austin the week before, and he's doing better. But you know how that is, and so I went down to Austin. I lost 5 days. I owe Mary all kinds of stuff that I kept putting her off on. Then I came back, and Mary and I said we're going to catch up on all these issues. And then Stanford dropped out of the race, and the city felt it was important to close the loop. We were clearly on a path toward getting this done, but all of a sudden, the mayor said instead of doing it next month, which was a plan like on January 15th, we're going to do it like 3 days from now. So it was great news all around, and I have a note going out to the campus today. Oh, you got it? Okay. I just wanted to reassure people that we're not going to have another empire there, that people from Ithaca are going to be heavily involved in working on it. I've asked my person I respect the most to, and thinking about how to organize things, to think this thing through, Mary, just asked her today. And Mary's very good at thinking about these things, and she's going to think about it and help guide us through the wilderness. And I don't quite have my head around every aspect of the thing yet, but it's I think it has three really positive aspects for Ithaca, actually, for Ithaca. One is that it's an extension of this campus, but with a budget that's firewalled, a pay-as-you-go budget that's firewalled. So the downside risk, which I was very worried about before getting this gift, has been ameliorated, because the gift is going to cover the whole phase one. Not only, and I didn't have a chance to tell you this, Mary, not only capital costs, but operating funds, which is great. The second thing is that it'll be an extension of Ithaca administratively. And so, you know, the same people are going to be in charge of the same activities. And the third thing is that the college and faculty that answered, it was like a grant application, basically is what it was, an RFP, CIS in engineering. They believe, the two deans believe, that this is an extension of their normal activities. So they intend to use it to enrich the activities that are going on both campuses. And the details of how that will be done is what we have to figure out now. So I think it'll be really, really good. But I'm still a little bit in shell shock. The best part of the whole deal was getting to ride in the mayor's car between two interviews yesterday. And they drove in the oncoming lane just to make it faster. Ooh. Drove in the oncoming lane, everybody scattered.
Ooh, like a movie.
It was like a movie. Yeah, just like a movie, for real. And I said to the mayor, can I do this, even when I'm not in the car? And he looked at me like I was really an idiot. And he said, well, you can try.
And then you can talk for New York, right?
So. Anyway, so thanks for letting me ventilate about that. I'm very excited about it. I'm also excited about taking 4 days off.
Well, we thought We'd like to spend our time with you today talking a little bit about the employee engagement survey results and, you know, what came out of them and all of that. And, you know, just curious, you know, what your initial response was, what might have surprised you about the results.
First of all, I'm thrilled that Mary has been able, with your support and guidance, to make this happen. It's long past time that we did an employee survey, so I'm glad we got it done. Secondly, the response rate was the biggest response rate of any survey I've ever had any piece of in any organization. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I've ever seen a response rate this high. I really don't think so.
Yeah.
Except for like some little tiny thing where there's 15 people. Thirdly, I believe from looking at it, people were honest and open. It's a very courageous thing to do when you feel vulnerable, just to be open and honest. I think that's very important. And then fourth, I'm glad that on some of the measures people feel, despite the budget cuts and the many reductions that have occurred and still occur selectively on campus, that in the aggregate, people still feel good about working here. It's a very important thing for me. And now, with Mary's guidance and with Marin Clarkberg's guidance, who I think is doing a really good job, understanding it more and more each day. And I did lose a few days part of which I would have spent on this. But those are my initial thoughts about it. And the questions, now Mary can share with you what the thinking is about next steps in terms of sharing information. And
well, good, you just gave my next question.
Marin is preparing, and we agreed to this before the survey was done, preparing the statistical data to go, and the company, to go to each vice president and dean, so that they can see their own. And they'll see their own compared to the university. So they'll see where their data is different. And they'll be able to read the comments. The comments have been sanitized. So the core point of the comment is still there, but anything that identifies like mm-hmm. what departments of that college or has been taken out, so you can't tell. And what we're doing now, what Marin's group is doing now, we're talking about is how do you look at this data to figure out what data tells you the core reasons for satisfaction versus dissatisfaction. Like, there were a lot of questions in there that are good just on their own to know the answer to, but what we're really looking for is, well, how do you differentiate? Because there's a fair amount of differentiation. How do you differentiate on factors that seem to indicate a general satisfaction with working here, and what can we learn about that? How can we build that satisfaction in places that don't have as much of it? What can we learn from the leader or sub-leaders of those areas that have actually advanced strategies that are helping? The issues are not surprising. They're the ones that we predicted we would hear. So affinity or sort of connection to their to the leadership and to the leadership of their unit, a sense of control over their destiny, the work that they have, workload as a separate issue. There are a scattering of institutional issues, but probably the largest being about pay, about the increases or lack thereof in the last few years, coupled with the increases in healthcare costs and parking costs. So people feel like they're just always kind of going backwards in terms of their finances. Some comments, particularly on the state side, about benefits. So they're sort of all over the map. I have read all of the individual comments. They are... there's, you know, a fair number that are really positive. You know, I really like Cornell, and, you know, particularly I would note from people who have been from other places and come here, and so they have the ability to compare. And there are some that are really quite negative, mean in some cases. Most I would say, are consistent with the quantitative data. They just illustrate the impact of an issue. So you see workload as an issue in that area, then you see the comments that comport to workload. So they tell you what it feels like to have that much work. So it's an overwhelming amount of information, quite candidly. And so it's just taking us a little while to figure out how to use it, because it's easy to just pick up a couple of things that are in there and run with those. But we're looking for the correlations with satisfaction, so we actually pick up on the ones that we think are most important.
So what do you think, I know you said that they're going to go down to the VPs and the deans. What do you think the timeline is for staff to kind of start to hear anything?
At their college or departmental level, probably February. We don't want to wait too long. There's, in some cases, it looks pretty much like the university data, mm-hmm. in which case they're going to need to understand what the statisticians think that data is telling us, right? And Marin is, and her staff are looking at it from these different angles. So we want to make sure she has time to do that, because the leader will want to understand what to do with what they've mm-hmm. seen. And on the other hand, people are just eager to get their data.
Yeah.
So our goal is to get it out to the deans and vice presidents in January with some expectation for what they do with it at that same time.
I think that's actually pretty fast for Marie.
Yeah, no, I think that is.
Yeah, and for Mary
fast.
To do it, because Mary's looking at every one of those comments, mm-hmm. and it's good to get your arms around it. So I think maybe when the semester starts or something, the deans will get theirs. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say probably around the middle to end of January. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is have a leadership meeting and send the data out with our expectations about what they will and won't do with it, with everybody in the room. So that we don't have, people sharing it in ways that we don't want it shared, or cutting it in ways we don't want to cut it, or acting on it in ways we don't want to see it. So, we could go around and hand deliver each one to the dean, but then you really aren't positive your message got through. So it's important to me that David be there when the data goes out, and that we're able to be clear about how it should be acted. What action should have.
Well, I'm glad to hear that people are eager to get their data. Because when we first started talking about this, one of the concerns that we had was ownership and bias, and whether the deans in particular would value the information. So I'm glad to know that they are.
They really are. They want to see it. I think they want Marin to help them understand what they're seeing, mm-hmm. and I think they're willing to wait because they know that it's going to improve their ability to understand it. It is, in its total, an overwhelming amount of information, particularly if you read the individualized comments, because you have no way as a non-statistician to know whether what you're reading is just one person's point of view or two people's, or correlates with something else in your data. So what it really is doing is highlighting something that's in that data that you wouldn't otherwise know. And that's what she's trying to do, is figure out what those key measures are. I will tell you, the one that she's seen so far is that sort of the general happiness quotient, if you will, seems to be tied not to your overall satisfaction with Cornell, but rather your answer to the question, would you recommend Cornell to others?
Mm-hmm. Have you identified what your expectations are yet?
So here's the way I'm thinking about this. There are some issues that we can and should ask at the university about. One of them is the amount of information people are actually getting, and understand the extent to which what's happening is based in the, why something's happening. There's a fair amount of pointed stuff to HR. I think we can respond to that. Even though some of it's about a college or unit HR office, it's still something I think HR can respond to. There's points about pay. There's points about benefits. Again, that doesn't mean that we can say yes, but we can respond. So there's the whole thing, set of things that are about the university. Then there's then there are differences by unit. So, you know, I may share points A, F, and G with somebody, and, you know, A, B, and C with somebody else. And so how those match together helps the unit know what to do with what they're saying. And then I would say, I think, honestly, the rest of it, is, which is much harder, is for, you know, David and I and probably Kent to lift above all of that and figure out what this really means in terms of, you know, our go-forward strategies and what we can do.
I have two real fast questions. The first question is, has there been any looking at the data in terms of breaking it out by, like, racial demographics, exempt, non-exempt, and has there been any surprising findings there? And the second question is, are you willing to share any more information with the EDA about the survey other than the general one in order for us to help decide how we should guide our next year in terms of what issues we should focus on in policy?
Yeah, those are both really great questions. So we have looked at the data by band level at a very macro level, and there's no difference. At a very macro level. Okay, so one of the things I learned about this survey is that the macro level is interesting but not sufficient. We're still getting the breakdown on minority status, and we do intend to do that, and gender, and we do intend to do that as well. We don't have those yet. In terms of what we will share here, I think one of the things that I hope you can understand is we probably will share everything at the university level. I think it's just it's hard enough to try to figure out what those college and unit data are really saying, but there's lots more to share with you about what the university data is telling us. Just like we need to take actions, as you need to take actions. And you wouldn't know how to do that yet any more than I do. So the answer is yes. I think you need to have a better understanding of how Marin's group is correlating this data and what it's telling her. And we'll share that with you when we get it. I mean, this is a huge undertaking for them, and I am just shocked at how quickly they're going through the different. And they don't know, so they try a correlation. It's not there. You know, I said, gosh, I'd like to see if this changes by pay, so we did it by band level. At least the first look, not there either. So we're trying to figure these things out so that what we really want to do is move from, you know, here's my laundry list of everything I don't like about Cornell, to, all right, how do we improve the workplace for people? What did we know about places that are reporting of, you know, given that it's just a really bad time, a better, more stable, more controllable workplace, and what can we learn about that? That's really what we're trying to get.
We were talking about that, Mary was explaining that to me today, and it's I guess two things about that. One is, it's terrific that that's the orientation of the people analyzing, because that's just what everybody, I think, would want. And secondly, it's great that the response rate was so high, because we can take this stuff seriously. I mean, this represents most of the people who work here.
I think we only had one unit.
It's amazing.
Significantly under 50%. That's pretty good.
So, you know, if it was a 15 or 20% response, you'd wonder, well, you know. But this is stuff you got to take seriously, all of us, because it represents most of the folks here.
So, Mary, as you you know, start looking, once you get the details, you know, that for the deans and the VPs and stuff, and they take them out to say their colleges, will they start to look at, or will you start to look at, okay, you know, this pocket of campus over here has a much better impression than, say, this pocket of campus over here, and comparing the two to say, why is that?
Right. So that's actually the conversation that David and I were having before we came in. What can we learn from those differences? You know, what does it tell us? Is it about the leadership? Is it about the resources? Is it about empowerment and involvement of staff? Because underlying this are the things we know about what makes a good workplace, right? Some of this stuff doesn't change, and we know a lot of that has eroded in the last few years. So here's the tension that I have. The finer grain we cut it, the better it is to understand differences. On the other hand, you have anomalies that make it better or worse, So there's something you can learn about it, but it's not necessarily actionable, or you can't extrapolate from it. And I want to be sure that when we cut the data, we don't in any way jeopardize the safety that people believed us when they answered it, they said they would have. So we have these nodes on a tree, on a PeopleSoft tree. So we have something like 500 units in the node below the dean and the vice president, 500 units that we can cut that is 10 people or more. Just doing that analysis, sort of to your point, all that does is allow us to understand those same questions right now at a finer grain. What I'd rather do is have Marin try to help us understand the key, it's clumps of questions, but the key clumps of questions that seem to indicate satisfaction best, they correlate best with satisfaction, and make that cut with that data instead. Because otherwise you get the same data, just you just keep cutting it into smaller and smaller. But if you're looking at 15 things, but really the grouped together, you can find out something, and otherwise you're just looking at 15 things, some of which are interesting and some of which don't correlate. So, we're really trying to give her the time as a statistician to understand that data. And then I think we will cut it based on that understanding in lots of different ways. So how does it differ by gender? How does it differ by ethnicity? How does it differ in areas of the campus? What can we learn from all of that? And so, yeah, that is the intention. I don't want to spend so much time analyzing the data that we don't do anything with it. But I also don't want to go out with action steps that are simplistic and really not dealing with the core issue. We do have areas that are doing very well. And what can we learn about that? Why is that? Why are some areas doing better than others?
And this last point that Mary made, which we were talking about just before we came, would be one, not the only, but one terrific outcome of this would even in a difficult time that we've been through, if we could find attributes of organizations, leaders, communication, whatever it might be, that could be promulgated around the campus for other organizations of that size, that would be a terrific outcome. Not the only outcome, but one terrific outcome. So I think, I don't want to talk for Mary because it's dangerous for your health to talk for Mary, but I think that, you know what I'm talking about, but I think that on the one hand, Mary feels the pressure to do this as fast as humanly possible, but on the other hand, she's trying to really drill down, like reading all the comments. So I think if we step to that...
Not something, by the way, I generally recommend.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Especially if you're a responsible person like Mary.
And especially if your name...
Yeah, and so I think that goal of having a meeting with the deans and vice presidents, about a month from now, give or take, and then after that, bringing it out, farther on campus, and then hopefully, as Mary just said, having something intelligent and effective to recommend campus-wide, and especially pointed at different units. That's the goal over the next 60 days or so, give or take.
I think our goal would be in the fiscal year we have a sense of what we are going to focus on.
Yeah.
President Escort, I just really wanted to thank you for initiating the staff engagement survey and also paying for it, because it's very expensive and costly matter. And one of the suggestions I have, and which we were talking about at the last meeting, was looking at this as a baseline. This is the first time we're doing it. And hopefully one of the action steps could be is that this becomes a regular cycle survey. So in 2015, we might see the survey given out again, seeing the changes. And so that's something I would really like to hope for, that even if we can't figure out how to use this data now, but just to know that, again, there's going to be a time that the staff will be able to make sure that their voice is heard.
This is such a very important point.
So Marin does plan to do it on some reoccurring basis, 3 years, 5 years, whatever. So she does. So she has the other surveys queued. We were the last survey to get done, but now that it's queued and it's done, she'll repeat it, on some regularized basis. Absolutely.
Yeah, a little corollary to your question that we were also talking about this morning is how much easier it will be to analyze subsequent data with that baseline. But in the meantime, we got to make use of this stuff because we got it. people put their heart and soul into it, took courage to answer and make those comments. And now we, and almost, and not almost everybody, but the majority of the people responded. So we have a lot of information to try to act on.
And I think a lot of it actually is actionable. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what I mean by that yet. In other words, there's always a percentage that just beef. You know, they don't like their boss, they don't like their assignments, whatever. In an anonymous survey, distressing, can't really do a lot about that. But then if you get up over top of the beef, what is it that you're hearing that's a stream of information that you can make actionable? You know, I do think they're there. I just want to make sure that I'm an intuitive kind of an action person, and Marin's very quantitative. And so we make a good pair, because I say, well, this kind of feels like this. And she says, that's interesting, except the data. And when I see it, she's right, you know. So I don't want it to seem like we won't do anything with it. I do think we will.
Is that really what you say, or are you just cleaning that up for the Or is it more like, I told you this, and then the other one says, well, I think you're crazy, or something like that?
We're doing a lot of it by email. So you can't get
you
the clenched
teeth
in
yeah.
there.
I have a comment and a question for Mary, I guess. The comment is, it not only took courage for people to write whatever they wrote, but it took a lot of courage for you to read that. So thank you. Mm-hmm. I know people are very appreciative that even though it was difficult. So thank you. And then the question is the group that completed less than 50% of the surveys in any way a group that had difficult access to email?
No.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say that completely. The numbers are a little lower for some of the groups that don't have access, but others, they were fine. But it was still a perfectly legitimate sample size.
Good.
In the areas that dip down, in some cases, they're just really small. So if they had two more people fill the survey out, they would have been at the average, you know, or something like that. I mean, they're just really small.
Did you find that the units that replied less were kind of consistent with the other units as far as like their satisfaction levels and all that?
That's an interesting
point.
That's
a great question.
At least the ones that are sticking out in my mind were more negative.
The units that didn't have the higher response rate.
Mm-hmm. You can imagine, you know, reasons why that might happen. People
right.
uncomfortable.
Right. It's always sure. hard to know. Did
yeah,
the people
exactly.
with the complaint
they worry that it's going to get back
submit
to
it, and the people that didn't have any complaints not submit it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because people there, you know, basically are checked out, and so they didn't think anybody would do anything about it? You know, it's always hard to know. That's why those correlations become so important, because the correlations help you understand if they were, because nobody's negative on every question, more negative than the mean on every question. So what are you seeing when you see a negative? And so if you look at a clump and it tells you something about engagement, right, affinity, a sense of control, whatever, then you can apply that, you can look at that group and they'll look against that mean on the key questions about that. It starts to tell you something. Is it about the leadership? Is it about the resources? Is it about communication? So we just don't know that yet. But we do know that at least in some of those cases, the numbers, they're small groups, and they do seem to be below the mean.
I know Maren talked about possibly having a way to compare to other universities, you know, how our survey data compares, but I'd be really interested to see. I just think it's phenomenal that employees are the same amount satisfied as our faculty members. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a really amazing number.
Yeah, it's
so
high.
I'm curious how that would compare to other universities.
Well, so universities aren't great at doing these,
yeah.
Right.
So we're having a little trouble finding out that. I can tell you it's much higher than corporate surveys are right now. They're much lower. They're in the 60 to 70% overall satisfaction. The question for us is, what does that really tell you, right? Because you have to hold every variable. So if they had a low percentage completed, does that really tell you anything? Are they in an urban area where there are many other choices? Are they in a type of business that's been particularly stressed? In general, I think universities have a higher level of loyalty, which is what those overall numbers tell you. So they tell you loyalty to the place. And we were pleased to see that number. I mean, I thought it would be a lot lower.
Mm-hmm. Especially that one about recommending work to others, whatever it was, 79 or whatever that number was. I was really happy to see.
Yeah, that was actually a slightly higher in its score, I think, at 4.02 or something like that. So it was a little bit higher than the overall satisfaction level. And it tells us that while I think people have eroded their loyalty a bit, I bet if we had done it in the good sense, it would have been higher.
Oh, yeah.
I still think people are willing to kind of hang in there.
Yeah, sure.
What we have to do is figure out whether that's because this is the only game in town. Well, they don't like have any other choice. Or if it's because they really are so connected to them. This is my view. That they're so connected to the mission that they're very forgiving.
Yeah.
And so if they see the right trajectory going in the right direction, they'll turn things around. We have pockets, Gordon and I were just talking about it, where honestly I think we have some unhappy people. And, you know, if you start out a little less happy, then problems hit you a little harder. So. It's just hard to. Right now, I'm overwhelmed with information. If you ask me on Monday, I say I think I read it one way, and I'm just really relying on Marin, because otherwise I tell myself a story, and it's just a story based on what I read.
I'm here to tell you that Marin's also dependent on Mary, because Mary brings a much different professional perspective to it. So it's good for us that they're doing it together. And like Mary said, between the two of them, they make up one complete human being, or however you put it.
I don't believe I said
it. You applied it. You applied it.
One other question that I have is, the data is going to go out, and it may take a little while for things to really trickle down to the staff who may be feeling what's going on. Have you put any thoughts behind maybe some follow-up communication to staff just to say where we are and what's going on?
Yeah, so Tommy's been pressing us a great deal to get a communication plan together, and we agree on that. We need to do that. And maybe I'm thinking too sequentially, but I keep thinking, I feel like I need to have better control over what it is that we're going to say. We knew we wanted everyone to know right away from David the overall data, so that they understood that we heard them and have access to go look at it themselves. But I guess I feel like until I have a better sense of whether, you know, how much of this has really got to be driven by David telling every dean and vice president to go do something, and how much of it is about what we're going to do at a university level, I'm nervous about going out and making, you know, talking about process and next steps, because, you know, I would act very differently if we coalesce around five things that need exploration at the university level. And there are 15 things that need exploration differently at the unit level. That's a different strategy than if we say, well, there's 10 things that need exploration at the university level, and there's 5 things you need to explore at the college and unit level. And I would just do that differently. I would have a different role. I would expect the president to have a different role, maybe the provost, if the number of things we're going to do in a similar fashion across the whole campus is larger, or the bigger issues are the ones that correlate the most satisfaction, then if really what we look at is we find, you know, it really is something that's about the work unit itself, and even if we're sharing that same perspective across many places, it won't get fixed if we make a proclamation or that really has to be done by a college or unit. That's a different next step strategy. So I feel like I'm being evasive, but I just don't know yet. When we know, we'll definitely talk to you. And
you know, I'm just thinking communication, even in just saying, you know, we're working on it. You know, it hasn't dropped off the earth, because you know, the note came out from you right afterwards, and then there's going to be this kind of lag.
6 weeks, yeah. So I probably failed to put that in the note when I sent that to the people who participated. I thought I had said that, but probably...
Maybe
you
did.
No, I mean, believe me, if you are so committed, if you didn't see it, I didn't make it clear enough. Well, we can keep in touch with each other to see exactly when we schedule the deans and VP meetings.
Yeah.
And if it's going to be some for a long time, we could send another note out.
I think what we wanted to do is get the data in the hands of the deans and VPs and get a leadership agreement on what we're going to do. Because the worst thing that could happen is for me to say, we're going to do this, and then go to the deans and VPs and find out that it's not what they want to have done and have them be right, you know. So I think we'd like to get our approach here, and this is reinforced in the comments, the lack of consistency across the campus is a big factor for people. In a sense that I read a lot of comments that there is a big difference between what they hear from me and what they experience in their work unit. And so the last thing we want to do, because we already know that, is do it again, right? Have me come out and say something that they don't see happening at their unit.
If you feel that at some point, even though we don't have content data, that in the course of some other communication that's going to everybody or whatever, I should say something, then I would take Mary's counsel. In other words, just to say we're working on it, not to say what it was.
Yeah, I think that's just we're working on it, just so that people know it's not falling away. That, you know, because it will take time, and it doesn't need.
Yeah.
I don't think people necessarily need to hear the answers, because we know the answers are going to take time to get, but just that we're working on something that's got forward progress.
5,000
responses. Yeah, and I think that's
it's a kind of a follow up to that whole thing, since I didn't see your note that you just sent out regarding the tech campus. I think a lot of people will be afraid that this kind of survey will get lost because you'll be all consumed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what I was just thinking when I was listening to Tanya, maybe, I sent a little sort of friendly, have a good holiday break message that I did like 22 weeks ago or so.
Right.
And in the beginning of the spring semester, Mary and others have urged me every year to say something. And maybe in that context, maybe I just wrote that down, the beginning of the year message, say something about this, and just remind people that it's on our radar screen.
Yeah, I think that's the point.
Is that good with you, Mary?
Yeah, that, so. I was going to suggest that afterwards.
It's a really good idea.
You know, David and I were just meeting, which is why we were late. I'm sorry, I couldn't stop talking. I also think there's a wonderful opportunity for the university to think about these issues in an integrated fashion. You know, the tech campus is a great opportunity for Cornell writ large. It's not just that another campus can be built far away. It creates opportunities. It creates a different vision of Cornell. And, you know, if don't get ahead of it, I think people here are going to say, oh, great. You know, I'm not going to. They already are. Saying, you know, where the resources are going to go there, the faculty, the good faculty are all going to want to be there, you know. And I'm hoping that we can think about and craft what I believe is true, which is it will be an opportunity for everybody. Some of us will be touched more directly than others, but that it's all part of rethinking Cornell in a way that's actually very exciting and positive.
You know, one thing to back up what Mary's saying, a little tiny thing, but it's been very, very encouraging to me, is I've heard from, you know, everybody you can imagine in the last 5 days. One thing is that the interest of supporters of the university in philanthropy for the Ithaca campus is up. It's not a scientific survey, it's just my feeling, you know, to what people are telling me in person, on the phone, by email. Just because they're proud of the place, they feel great about it, and maybe we're, you know, right on the edge of getting somebody to agree to do this or that, the other thing, and now they said, you know, count me in, which is encouraging. But I think your point, Tanya, I'll put that in the beginning of your message. I'll make sure that Mary reads it and corrects the grammar. Mary's not a big grammarian, but she's better than I am. So once she dropped that Boston accent, she really did better.
Because I made it late for this meeting.
Do you have time for one more, a different issue?
I'm
sorry,
no,
you had a question.
Had a
sorry.
Really quick couple things. First of all, I think that it says a lot about Cornell that you're even willing to do survey in the first place. I think it gives people hope. And I think that, you know, it almost boosts morale in and of itself. Because there's probably a lot of places in the corporate world that we need to consider. They don't care. So I think that's great. And also, I don't know if you've answered this or not, but what are the next steps as far as the tech campus goes?
I'd love to tell you about that. I'll make it super brief. Mary is going to directly advise me and Ken Fox about reasonable ways to set up the administrative structure and connections, and just the way she expressed it before, I think is, as usual, just the right attitude to have, and that is that it's an opportunity for all the ships to rise. And so, because Mary's not very busy, I thought she was like the best person to do it. Because you know what's really weird? There's 168 hours in the week, 168 hours, and I found out by talking to a lot of people, Kip and so on, that she's sleeping like 40 of them or something. So, honestly, we just cut into that, it'd be super. besides that next step, we are going to talk to some groups that are affected by this decision that were not at the table, like on Roosevelt Island. So I haven't even had a chance to tell you this, but I'm thinking of having like a town hall meeting there or something like that, whatever you call it, because there's a hospital that's going to be closed. The decision was made long before this competition to close Goldwater Hospital and move the people into a Manhattan site, people who are chronically in the hospital. But I think other people there, some of whom are nervous, many of whom are positive, thinking that it will bring some more attention and luster to the place, have not had a chance to deal with us at all. So we're talking about having a town hall meeting. And so that's the first thing I want to do, is talk to the people who are really going to be affected by, but have not had any piece of that. Around the same time frame, right after the break, the deans and vice presidents and the campus in general here, but starting with the leadership, needs to know more about it, because the process up to now has been like somebody's answering a request for proposals for a grant from, NSF or something. That's what it was. It was a request for proposals from the city, and they had, bing, 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 bing. And the team went bing, 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 and got it. Now, it's so massive that it has the possibility of making things better in a much larger group of areas. But people don't know much about it. And so we're figuring out ways to get that out there. The proposal was 500 pages long, and there's a lot of detail. There's a lot of sales talk in there as well, but there's a lot of details, and finding a way to summarize that so it's digestible is what we're doing. If you have a chance to go online, and we'll do this, we'll put a link out but on the website, but in the mayor's office, there is the press release. It was wasn't our press release, the mayor's office press release, and they summarized a lot. Did you see that stuff there? Mm-hmm. They summarized a lot of the agreements that we made. How many of these, how many of these, how many of these? And we got a chance to check those and make sure that they were consonant with the agreement. It's like eight or nine page, if I'm not exaggerating, a press release, single spaces. Longest press release I ever heard. But it's quite detailed. And so people can learn a lot from looking at that. It's public domain. And then the big step is deciding the pace of enrolling students, because it's overwhelmingly an educational enterprise. And so we'll have a few students having experiences in New York this next fall, but the matriculation of the first real classes, grad students only, will be a year from this fall, in the fall of 13.
Not on Roosevelt.
Right, not on Roosevelt. I'm sorry, it's very important to say it'll take 3-4 years to get structures up there. But they'll be in. We have 8 footprints in Manhattan, as many of you know, and it might be in one of those places or in some other leased space. So one other thing, if you have never read about the donor, Chuck Feeney, and Atlantic Philanthropies, because he's allowed us to go public, they put word out on Monday night or Sunday night, something like that. They did that themselves. It was a fascinating life. Fascinating, fascinating man.
Yeah,
yeah.
What's the name of his book?
The book about him is called The Billionaire Who Wasn't.
Yeah.
And he was anonymous all these years. He's given $620 million to Cornell before this, never allowed his name to be used. And he gave so much money in Ireland. Ireland's a country of only about 5 million people. And you may remember a while ago they had a big boost in their presence in the high-tech telecommunications world, all that stuff. People credit that to him because he invested philanthropy in the universities and the nonprofits. They had him involved behind the scenes in the peace talks in Ireland. He didn't want anybody to know he was doing it. they call him the man who saved Ireland. He works in Vietnam. He works in places where, you know, the worst things are happening. And he believes that this is a way to help. We're going to work with the K-12 system in New York and do all these things, and he thinks it's something that has good effects beyond Cornell. One other issue real quick. Oh, sorry. Well, please.
No, I'm good, thanks.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Just a quick one. I haven't had a chance to talk to many of the staff leaders about the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development deal that they just got finished. Mary was part of that team, Charlie Krasansky, who's the state relations person in Albany, and Steve Johnson were the main people. You saw we got $49.4 million to Southern Tier. We're the third smallest region of the state population-wise. I was pretty happy about that. New York City got $69 million, and we got $50 million. Think about that ratio. Anyway, they're going to have another round of grants, and we're going to take a deep breath after a short break.
It's getting shorter every minute.
And when I say we, you know what I'm talking about. So we're going to try to go in with some more aggressive identification of Cornell projects. The first time around, I was sensitive to not making it seem like the whole process was for Cornell. But I think there's no reason not to do more of that.
I think there'll be a lot of exciting opportunities in this next round. There was so much that needed to be done in the flooded areas and in areas of the Southern Tier that are just devastated, that I thought it was the right thing to do in the first round. But the second round, we're being encouraged. So if you look at what happened up in the Syracuse region, there are a lot of Syracuse projects, Syracuse University projects that were funded. And so we feel like we're getting encouragement to think that way. So we've got some great faculty projects going on. I think that could be really helpful to the Southern Tier.
The thing you find out about, I mean, not that you didn't know this already, but traveling around the Southern Tier and talking to people, the Marcellus Shale thing is just ripping people apart in neighborhoods. And I was driving in one area, and there's, I'm sure you've seen this a lot, but there's one rural area, and the mailbox has a sign that says, I'm barely getting by. I want to start drilling now. I own this amount of land. Here's my phone number. Let's go. And the next neighbor has a sign that says, don't listen to this. This is over my dead body. Are you going to drill here? It's like horribly sad.
Yeah.
And the more you get way, way, way in rural areas right along the Pennsylvania border, the tougher it is. One thing good about some of the ideas that Mary was just referring to was that they're not dependent on being in a big urban area like Rochester or Buffalo or Syracuse or bigger urban area. So I just want to let you know, we'll try to keep people apprised of that.
And if you notice the report, I don't know if you saw it, but that's also on the governor's website. David and Tom Trantner, who were the co-chairs, steered the entire project away from saying anything about fracking, which was really smart. Because the timeline to get anything submitted was really short. And so it just has it. The regional council didn't take a position.
Does Cornell have a policy on fracking?
Yeah, we have a moratorium that I put on 2 years ago that we're maintaining. When I go to Albany, I'll get out of your way in a second. When I go to Albany and talk to state legislators on our behalf about contract funding and so on, not to be facetious, but you meet with conservative political groups, and they say to me, how irresponsible I am not to allow fracking because of these issues, people's livelihood. It's great to be an environmentalist and be on your high horse, but meantime you're consigning people to poverty by not doing this. And then I go to the liberal group and they say, don't you even think about allowing this to happen? And they're all well-intentioned people. They really are. They just have a really strong difference of opinion about this. And I personally think sometime in calendar 12 there'll be some licenses let somewhere, somehow. It just sort of looks like to me by the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah, I think the state will take a view. Yeah. And
yeah.
University can keep, we don't have that much in the Marcellus Shale area. We have a lot in the Utica Shale. So that was where the interest by the oil companies started, actually, the gas companies. was in the Utica Shale area, so that's when we started talking about this, because we have actually quite a bit of deep natural gas stores in the Utica Shale, but we're in the thinner areas of the Marcellus Shale, so we don't have as much.
The only thing I've been wondering about is if you found this something under Day Hall.
Would you like to read the survey comments? I can already tell you.
Take the wrecking ball and include the people, right?
So while they're in there.
Thanks, you guys. I hope everybody has a really good holiday.
Thank you. Hope
you have some chance to stand down.
We got a little something for you guys from the EA.
That's so nice. Thank you.
I hope you guys take your break. So you all plan.
I hope you do.
Yes,
start at 4:30 today.
Nice.
Thank you.
You don't have to take personal time.
You can
vacation time.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a great break. Have a nice holiday and break.
See, as a second, I think I have a little time to lose the energy. Better than that.
Well, I can stay in my bathroom.
Yeah, hopefully.
There you go.
I know it is.
It's very dreary.
So Beth, you have to.
Okay,
that's all right.
I can come.
Do you want Leslie to come?
Yeah, there might be a job for the voting
committee, whatever the election committee is.
I'm sorry, but I'm having a brain aneurysm here. Well, we want to ask about some paper ballots.
Okay. Oh, just syncing it up. So just finding out when the election committee is going to be.
Oh, okay. Shall we talk about
go that? For it.
Okay.
That's so the only thing we have left.
So the trustee nominating committee met right before this meeting, and we would like to try to coordinate that election with, obviously, the EA election so that all the publicity goes out together and, it dovetails. So I don't, unless somebody has some concerns about that, I don't see that.
Do they have to get charter and formal?
No, I don't think so. Does it? It's happened before, right? We've kind of done it that way before.
I mean, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
Do we have to commit a revolution or something?
I don't know, Ari, do you have a comment on that?
Yes, a resolution would be ideal, but some sort of, voted motion would be fine, too.
Well, it
doesn't have to say we're at.
In the past, we've kind of overlapped, haven't we, in ways promoting those two things?
For you, though, I don't remember that.
I mean, they come out.
The elections were run at the same time on the same ballot, so
right.
The only place where they were distinguished was in the candidate material. So you would come into the office and you would pick up a different packet. We don't have packets anymore, so.
Okay. Do we have an election committee chair?
No.
We can just have a motion, not a resolution.
Well, a resolution is basically just a written motion, usually with whereas and result.
No, but I'm just saying, can you just make that into a motion to where it's just official right now?
I don't know, can I?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
So make a motion.
I move that we put that we promote the EA trustee, the employee elected trustee and the EA election together.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any abstained? No.
There was one other issue that came up in that we were in the past. Well, last year anyway, we went to strictly electronic balloting, which obviously has its advantages and it's less time consuming. However, I was the one squeaky wheel apparently. That brought up, given that when we did the engagement survey, that we had over 500 people reply by paper ballot that were mailed to their mailbox specifically, that I find it kind of hard, that I find it personally hard that we should overlook those people by not having paper ballots delivered to the mailbox. But, you know, obviously there's a money component and a time component to it all. So I just thought it should be something we should discuss, that how we want to reach those people. If we're overlooking them, if we're, I don't know. So that we didn't really come to a resolution in our little subcommittee.
There were no paper ballots involved in the staff survey system, right?
Yeah, they got
500.
Well, 500 returned. Yeah. I'm not sure how many got. I think she said like 1,000 got mailed.
I thought it was 500 they got mailed and 300 got.
Okay. So
would you do it the same way? Whereas the people who haven't responded or voted then get sent the ballot, or just everybody gets the ballot?
No.
Same way.
If you have a net ID, you'll get electronic. You will vote electronically. You'll get an email with a link. If you do not have an active Cornell ID,
right,
or have never had an active Cornell ID, you would get
something
in your mailbox.
Was people who didn't respond, even if you had an ID or not, they sent a paper ballot.
The point of correction, there were 500 employees that turned in a paper survey. Out of that, it was just noted that 300 had never activated their net ID. So there were people who... We definitely have 300 who haven't activated their net IDs, but in addition to that, some people prefer to do the paper as opposed to electronic.
Is there any way that we can take a look at who has voted at the elections to see proportionally what areas they've come from? I mean, I don't know.
That trustee election?
Just in elections in general, to see if we are having people, you know, proportionally representative of each area.
Well, the last two elections have been effectively all electronic. We offered a paper ballot 2 years ago, but it wasn't distributed. It was just something people could download and print if they preferred that, and only one or two were returned. Prior to that, it was only paper. So the last trustee election was the last only paper election, and we did not retain information about who voted. We didn't even we didn't retain it long after that election was completed.
Perhaps if we had the information about who hasn't activated the net ID, they should get a paper ballot, perhaps, and then you might actually also be able to get information about who has not had any recent activity on an NID.
Well, that's exactly what
Morin and them
did. Morin and them did.
Yeah. Right.
I thought they did, who didn't reply, they sent the paper ballot.
No.
You sure?
Yeah, two people who didn't activate, and
if they didn't reply, they just got a second email saying,
And then
I thought people who normally, some of my friends, they said they got a paper ballot, and I know they use their net ID a lot.
They could call and request one.
Was it a call? So that's how they did it, was just calling in people who don't use it a lot. And then how many people don't use a net ID a lot, according to them?
There was at least 300 that hadn't even
activated it. Well, it was well over 500, I know. So we got 500 responses back out of it. I don't remember exactly how many she said.
I think it's very important to include folks who don't have regular access during their work day to a computer to make sure that they are even aware that there's an election going on.
So is it possible for the election committee to make a proposal, to meet and make a proposal for how this gets done?
Yes. So who's up for re-election this year? So everyone whose hands are not up are the elections committee. That is the elections committee, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Would it make sense to have polling
places
for places where you know people can't use their computer during the replacement and they could go and vote there?
that's a really interesting book.
Well, I would probably, I'm thinking not. I think that would be administratively infeasible. Now, with the online voting, any employee can activate their NetID, and there are computer labs around campus that are open before and after the workday. I think there are some that are open 24 hours, depending on the day. So,
I think
if you're
it's
approaching it as as a, say, a public election would be, people have, people can go outside of their work hours to a computer lab.
But they won't. I think it would be interesting to see how many people who don't have an active NetID voted in the last election.
Well, that's what I was asking.
Right.
Is if we could look at the last election results.
So we don't know.
There's no way to know.
Electronically
voted.
We do not have a record of the specific. We do not have the personally identifiable information you would need to figure out what a person's labor affiliation was at the time.
We have NetID, though, right?
I think my only concern is just the call.
We don't have NetID.
Oh, we don't have NetID sample.
Yeah, because they didn't vote electronically back then.
NetID, we could give them to someone who could find it out for us.
I remember asking Marin how much it cost, but I don't remember what she said.
I mean, because I just know, historically, we have a low voter turnout in general, so just paying all this money, you know, to send out paper ballots. Would that justify the cost that's already such a low? Like, would that actually generate more?
Personally, I think we have a responsibility to improve those people.
Try it one time and.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering,
right,
I don't know
if
the cost is like, how
much
does it
cost
to everybody a paper ballot?
We try, right.
Yeah,
but
we
then
try.
We can say we have,
yeah,
some, we have some statistical information,
yeah,
that it's not working. Because I don't think we can say, well, last year we only got two paper ballots. Well, that's because it just said in the paw print, if you would like a ballot, go to the assembly's office.
Yeah.
If you didn't get one in your mailbox. So, if we had some past statistical information that said, you know, you're going to spend $1,000 to send these out, and
which
we're not getting any back.
Because right, that's just looking at past elections where we use paper ballots for what the cost.
I don't think it'll cost too much to send out.
The last time that we administered paper election, where we sent it out to everybody and tabulated them back, it cost about $4,000. So that
was everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just in interest, because we are out of time, can we talk about this at the retreat to bring back a recommendation to the full EA and what we can do? Because that's our next meeting. And then maybe if we can find out what some costs are. I don't know. Do you think Marin, do you remember if Marin gave us that?
I remember asking her. I don't remember what she said, but
that's what she
is.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you have some information about who those 300 are, because it's, you know, maybe the idea is to put ballots in certain locations around campus that people can ask rather than doing the whole mailing.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.